Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Agriculture is one of the top economic drivers in Northumberland County. There were 840 farms in Northumberland according to a study done in 2021. The same study found dairy operations are the main agribusiness in the county, making up for nearly a third of all cash receipts. With dairy and the rest of the agriculture industry under scrutiny from the United States as tariffs loom large, Alan Crothers, president of the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture, will provide a local perspective. He will paint a picture of the consequences of a range of threats. Listen carefully to hear the local implications and see what you think. I'm so pleased to welcome Alan Crothers, president of the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture, to Consider This Northumberland. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you.
Let's dive right in. Now, both China and the United States have levied tariffs on Canadian farmers. What is the reaction of local farmers you're talking to these days?
So the tariff talks, they started with talking about the U.S. tariff started last November. I had attended the annual meeting in Toronto with the OFA convention, and on the Monday night, as it was starting, Donald Trump came out and said he was going to be tariffing Canadians. And so the next morning we had a bit of a tariff talk and some resolutions and thoughts got put on paper, and of course ever since Donald Trump has gotten in January, there's been lots of rhetoric, lots of misinformation, lots of things that he wants to do. When he first got in 8 years ago, he talked about doing tariffs back then. So one of the discussions, or start of the discussions, they sat down and did a U.S.-Canada-Mexico trade agreement, CUSMA, or USMCA, whichever one you want to start with. And a lot of tariff talk, export talk, import-export got talked over that agreement, and they came to a fairly agreeable document at the time. So, you know, since he's gotten back in, he thinks, and this is the opinion, that we feel that he thinks that he can get a better deal now, and he keeps talking about putting tariffs on aluminum and steel and lumber and you know, of course, that starts to make us worry. How is that going to affect our costs, our cost of productions? You know, and then the talk is, well, if you're going to put tariffs on aluminum and steel, we're going to put a retaliatory tariff on our end. So when he decides to put a tariff on steel and lumber, it actually gets taxed on or put on his end, so they use that money in their coffers on how they're going to fight the import export.
So that's a great overview, and I appreciate it very much. But I'm more interested too in local people. When you're out talking across the fence, or you see somebody in the grocery store, and you're talking about this stuff, what are people saying to you that is their biggest worry?
So their worry is, how is it going to affect us? How costly is it going to be for our business? So I had a conversation with an equipment dealer, and I'm gonna pick on Case New Holland Tractors. So Case Tractors are red, New Holland they're blue. You know, I don't feel offended if you're a John Deere fan. We still like John Deere's also, but he talked about the dealer talked about what the cost of machinery would be, and he said Donald puts a tariff on steel and aluminum, which is a lot of steel and aluminum in Case and New Holland Tractors, and same with John Deere, but it's only going to pertain at this point for U.S. made equipment. So a lot of people say, oh, the Case New Holland Tractors, they're built in the States. Actually, a lot of them are processed and built in Europe, but it's the bigger equipment, the big 250, 300 horsepower tractors that they take up more road than anything when they go down the road and annoy all our constituents in Northumberland County as we're planting our crops. The small equipment, hay equipment that's built, a lot of it's built in the Dakotas, in Pennsylvania, Ohio, they would have an increase in price. We could see up to 25%. When it comes to fertilizer and our crop protection ingredients, and I'll go through the list. Nitrogen, which is a lot of nitrogen, is made through the natural gas process, being able to have a nitrogen source. So that provides greening and growing of the crops. Phosphorus, which is in plant development and plant health. There are three sources of phosphorus in the world. One is in Morocco, another one is in Russia, and then another one in the States is phosphorus. So he hasn't put anything on paper for phosphorus, but we all know what tariffs did there a few years ago when the federal government put a tariff on fertilizers coming out of Russia. Justin Trudeau and the Liberals put a 30% tariff on that, and that increased our prices for crop protection by 30% for the fertilizer aspect. If there's the 30% tariff on fertilizer, the fertilizers coming out of Russia, and the 30% or 25% coming out of Florida, the Moroccan government is probably going to look at, hey, we can charge a higher price for our phosphorus. One of the comments was that Donald was going to put, I think, a tariff on potash, and that was going to increase, I think, the last time I heard it was 10%. Donald has his ups and downs when it comes to conversations, and it came in at 10%. So,
can I just interject for just a second? So all these inputs that you have that are coming from the United States and from other countries, is there any way that you can change suppliers, or how easy is it for a local farmer to pivot?
Well, I know a lot of fertilizer or crop input suppliers try to buy crop protection products, fertilizers, et cetera, at their best price. I deal with TCO out of Colburn. I do deal with a little bit from County Farm Center in Belleville. They try to buy wherever they can get the cheapest price, and of course potash is a Canadian product for the most part, because I would say probably 40 to 50% of the potash out there is produced in Saskatchewan. And I hope I got those totals right, but the 10% tariff and what Donald had wanted on potash, he thinks that he can get potash in the States. Now, I know there is some potash mined in out west, but I don't know what the volumes are. When it comes to selling our products, and we all know what has happened to the markets, especially on the Toronto Stock Exchange, the New York Stock Exchange, when the tariff talks came out, the market prices plummeted because of the market uncertainty. And it's similar in the grain industry. Like we've lost some market price on corn, soybeans, and wheat, and obviously the tariff on canola was being placed on canola and canola oil and cakes and even peas and lentils from the Chinese government. That has made the market price on canola go down.
Let's follow up on that, because that's really interesting, because when you talk about the Chinese tariffs, they're I think putting on something like 100% on canola and peas, 25% on pork. But the crops, when you talk to a crop farmer, I mean, you guys haven't planted yet.
Nope.
I mean, this would be different if it was, say, June or August or something, because you'd have your crops already in the ground. Again, how easy is it for a local farmer to pivot and say, okay, I'm not going to grow this, I'm going to grow that? Is it that simple, or is it more complicated?
It's a little bit more complicated. I know that a lot of farmers, especially myself, we will pre-buy some supplies. So in November, December, we'll kind of look at our cropping practices for next year, and we'll pre-buy some fertilizer. We'll pre-buy probably the majority of our seed that we'll need for the upcoming year. Obviously, winter wheat is planted in September and October, and a little bit early November, depending on the temperature and the climate at the time. So our seed has already been purchased. I know a lot of people, a lot of the older farmers that maybe I'll make my choice in the springtime. They're still going to plant a crop. They just don't know what acreage you're going to plant and what percentage of that acreage is going to get planted. A livestock farmer that is producing dairy, beef, pork, or chicken, they already know that they have to plant a crop for their feed and their business.
What happens, for example, with a pork producer? So, you know, will there be a shrinking number of the number of pigs that they raise, or beef cattle? Is it the same? How does that work?
So I had a conversation with Dan Ferguson. Dan is the Ontario beef go-to person with Beef Farmers of Ontario, and I asked for some information with him. So. And I'm going to go over the whole comment that he made. So it'll take me about 30 seconds here, Robert, if you don't mind. So in Canada, the beef sector exports roughly 50% of what they produce, and 75% of that total is exported to the U.S. So Europe will get some, China will get some, you know, other close export trading customers we have would take the rest. So Canada exports $7 billion in total beef exports. $6 billion of it goes to the United States. So that's 1 year. So in a 5-year average of animals going to the States, 2,455 head go to the United States weekly from Canadian farmers. Ontario exports roughly 125,000 head to the United States, and that mostly gets processed into steaks and hamburgers. And we import 50,000 animals back, and most of these animals are fed and finished here. So we don't have the capacity to process our cattle here in Ontario, in federally inspected plants. And a lot of that has gone to the States in the last 15, 20, 25 years. The municipalities have needed to increase their municipal taxes. Transportation has become more expensive because Canada is a northern country. We have to heat our plants in the wintertime, so the energy costs to keep things open in the wintertime are needed. So that's a detrimental thing if you want to send your animals to Florida or Texas to get processed. They don't have to heat their plants like they have to do in Ontario. So a 25% tariff impacts the price for all beef, and not just what is destined for the U.S. And the one study shows that a 15% price slide will be sustained in tariffs and backlogs. So the beef farmers are lobbying the Canadian Cattlemen's Association. And if they include it on retaliatory tariffs, which are going to hurt both sides, we're hoping that they can exempt this and move on. So when I go to pork.
Well, hold on. Before you get to pork, let's just take a pause for a moment and go back, because you said a lot of important things there. And one thing that really struck me was the role of processors.
Yep.
Now, that would be beef. It would also include pork. It would include
chicken,
turkey,
lamb.
You got the list going. So all these processors down in the States, and then they ship final product back to Canada to be sold. This obviously is going to get impacted. How can we get more processors in Canada?
Well, it's a hard process when you think of all the abattoirs that have closed over the years. You know, some of the abattoirs have closed because of nobody wanted to take over the business, maybe financial concerns, you know, some poor management practices, or their market ran out. You know, a lot of grocery stores will buy a good product, but if there's a substantial difference in price, they will pick a cheaper price sometimes. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency has some pretty stringent rules and regulations when it comes to sourcing meats and milks and eggs and whatever else. And it's a health thing. It's a health study that the Canadian Food Inspection Agency has done for years. You know, they talk about bringing beef in from Brazil. They talk about bringing pork and chicken from East Asia. You know, their safety concerns. There might be some more things that are in that we shouldn't be consuming. So,
well,
you know,
can we talk a bit about local though? Because I mean, at some point there were local abattoirs.
Yep. So there was lots of mom and pop small abattoirs. A lot of them have closed. You know, a lot of the mom and pop shops, if they didn't have any young family members that would want to take over that, you know, mom and pop would work 6 o'clock in the morning Monday, and they'd close their doors on Friday at maybe 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and then they might open for another 3 or 4 hours on the Saturday. A lot of young families wanting to do that they don't want to work those long hours. You know, I understand that. I know that my parents, they worked long hours. They enjoyed it. You know, we had lots of good family times, and the atmosphere has changed, when it comes to running some businesses. If there is a company out there that is willing to become an abattoir, I would hope that all levels of Canadian governments, federal, provincial, and municipal, would work with these producers to open up some of these abattoirs. I know that the conversation I had with a pork producer, they had a contract with taking some of their pork into Quebec, and it went to Oleomill in Quebec, and that abattoir was owned by Solio Ag, and they went through some financial restructuring and they ended up closing their abattoir. So it was a loss to pork producers, especially in Eastern Ontario. So the two remaining Ontario processors are in Western Ontario, Conestoga and Safina. And I'm not exactly sure. Ontario ships 30,000 pigs a week to the United States. And that, in turn, a lot of that comes back in processed pork.
Going back to this issue of processing, I mean, is this something that, considering the situation that we're entering into, is this something that the government needs to act upon in a more serious way, you know, provide financing and help with loans? I mean, to get a Canadian processing plants up and running so that we don't have to do this across the border.
It would be an ideal thing. I know the beef producers and the pork producers of the province are talking. The Canadian Federation of Agriculture and OFA is also on board trying to get talks, but it's something that's going to take time and lots of money. You just can't build a factory or build a processing plant overnight. It takes months. It may take a year and a half before it could happen. And we know that the current federal government in the United States is going to be around for at least 3.5 more years. So, you know, it's going to take a lot of people to do this. It's going to take a lot of money, a lot of time. The buy Canadian, the buy local comments have been made out there. Like we have been wanting people to buy local because it promotes local labor, local business. The money that is earned in the area when you go and buy vegetables or meat locally, that money stays in the area and it goes towards buying a new car, you know, maybe buying some recreational equipment, and that money stays in the area. Sure, the recreation may not happen, but locally, but.
One area that is particularly being targeted right now is dairy. There's a lot of talk about dairy. Now, before we get into the weeds, can you give listeners a basic understanding, a brief understanding of the Canadian supply management system for dairy? How does that work?
So supply management hits a few commodities. The dairy obviously was set up in the mid-1960s because there was a glut of milk being produced, and it wasn't being processed properly, wasn't being processed fairly. So the milk producers of the milk marketing board was founded about 1965, I believe it was, or 1966. The egg producers, the chicken, turkey, they were all about the same time. So when you have a supply managed system, the board works on actual supply needed for the area. You know, the Ontario milk producers, they have milk producers that are, their milk goes to dairies to get processed for cheese, whey, you know, fluid milk. Some of it goes into industrial milk, which is in, it goes into powder. For the egg marketing board, they have two markets. They have table market and a breaker market. So the breaker market is cracked eggs, and that, a lot of that goes into making scrambled eggs, processed scrambled eggs for the fast food market. And the supply management that started out came out with cost of production, and then they looked at how much milk, how much eggs, how much chicken was being used, and they kind of keep it that supply stays in the area. The excess would get exported. So industrial milk is usually the export thing with the dairy producers. And
describing then is a system whereby if you're a farmer, you have a quota. Yep. I can own so many dairy cows. I can own so many chickens. Like I don't produce so many eggs, so much of whatever the poultry, whatever it is. And there you produce that, and then that then controls the price because the supply is controlled, and they look and they try to balance that with how much we consume as customers. So that system, why is that necessary for a farmer to have that system in place? Why is it so sacred to them?
So I know that we would like to produce everything, lots of it and everything. But if we end up producing too much, then we have to find an outside market to get rid of it. So, you know, we have roughly 41 million occupants that live in Canada, and we would like to be self-sufficient, but we also are in the business to make some money. So any excess could get exported to Europe, to China, to the United States. And hopefully we can get a fair price for it. Donald Trump thinks that they should be able to produce just as much or more than we are, and they could flood the market, and they would be the import supplier for everything in the world.
So, but from a farmer's perspective, it is not true that for it just means that you know how much money is going to be coming in, you know how much you're going to be producing. It takes a lot of the guesswork and the risk out of the system, and therefore stabilizes prices for consumers.
It does.
At the same time, farmers are making enough profit to hopefully keep on going if all things are equal. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, you are correct in that. And of course, you know, we would like to make money that we could, you know, upgrade our equipment. You know, obviously, if we had to build another barn or buy some more equipment, and of course, nothing lasts forever. We all know that. You know, you can't go out and buy a piece of machinery and expect to pay for it in 6 months. It's usually over a lot of time. So, you know, when we have a supply managed business, we know what we're getting for our product. We can have a budget, and we know when we can utilize that cash flow.
When we compare that to the American agricultural support system, because they do have one, it's just not like ours. I understand it's something called sectoral supports. In other words, that the American taxpayers pay their taxes, that tax money is then given directly to the farmers in terms of support grants and financial compensation. How does that compare in your mind to our system?
I think it's a little bit different. I haven't studied very much of the U.S. farm aid. You know, I hear about all the indicators that they're going to plant so many acres of corn or so many acres of soybeans or so much of wheat, and then if they want to not grow the crop, or they pay them not to grow it, that's kind of a bit of a supply management from the government's point of view. You know, and I can, if I can go on and talk about the eggs more, a little bit more about the chickens and turkeys. There really isn't an awful lot of worry yet. And of course, Robert, you've probably heard of all the comments coming out of the White House that things are going to get worse for our customers or our competition. And we do get worried. You know, we think about our mental health on the farm. Is, you know, when the government's telling another government from another country is telling us how we're going to be running our business or how we're going to be paying or how we're going to be tariffing their things, that's a worry on us. You know, people can't see what I look like, but I've got gray hair and I don't have an awful lot of it. So, you know, we're pulling our hair out. And that, to me, it's a bit of a funny comment and stuff, but it is frustrating when we do bring these things up that, you know, it's agitating us to the point that we're pulling our hair out.
I appreciate that. And one thing I did want to talk about was just the amount of uncertainty that farmers deal with. There's always this uncertainty that goes with how much additional stress is this putting on farmers in Northumberland? What are they saying to you?
Their optimism is a lot lower than it has been in previous years. You know, we have the concerns of what we're going to get paid for our product. You know, I did say that how the markets went down. Market prices have gone down for the last month. You know, you can see it on the stock exchange, New York Stock Exchange and Toronto Stock Exchange. When you hear that you're not going to get paid for your product as much as you got paid last year, it frustrates me. The pork producers, you know, they could potentially be losing up to $60 a hog. And at those kind of prices, there's not going to be many hog producers left in Ontario. Why am I going to grow something for less money and have to fight to get any kind of aid, whether it be through AgriInvest or AgriStability?
On a scale of 1 to 10, then, how serious is this threat?
I would say it's probably a 6 to 7, depending on your commodity you're in. If you're in the market of buying equipment that is made in the United States, or we have product that has to go to the United States to get made, it's a 7 or 8, because we are going to have to pay more money for that equipment, or we're going to have to pay more for our products that are produced. Retaliatory tariffs that the Canadian government, we hope that they don't do very much, because that's going to tax us. The supply local, buy local theme out there, where a lot of people are saying, if you buy local, you know, supply local, you know, it makes us feel more confident that our neighbors, our friends and neighbors are helping to keep industry alive and agriculture alive in Canada.
Have you talked to the local MP or MPP about all of this?
So we've had just random talks with our member of parliament, Philip Lawrence. Of course, the prime minister elect called an election on Sunday. We're hoping to have all candidates meeting, hopefully in the next 2 to 3 weeks, with candidates that are vying for the federal election. We have a town hall talk with David Piccini at the Codrington Community Center on April 4th in the morning, and we're going to be promoting this in the ag industry, because the provincial politicians, they're also supporting Canadian or Ontario residents against this tariff threat or these tariff talks that Donald Trump has brought on.
What is Philip Lawrence saying to you?
Of course, every time we have a conversation with Philip Lawrence, there's been another conversation about a different tariff. We're not going to really know what is really going to hit the fan, so to speak, on April 2nd. And I don't think anybody really does. You know, he says we're going to do this, we're going to do that. You know, it's one of those things. I think that they both the big Liberals and the Conservatives and even the NDP said that they're going to fight these tariffs and they're going to support their Canadian constituents. So I hope they back us, and I hope that we can weather this storm and get through it.
You hear people talk about something called food sovereignty. Can Canadian farmers meet the needs of this country to supply sufficient food?
For the most part, yes. For the most part. And so food sovereignty or food safety or food security is in there. On this past weekend, there was a program, I believe it was on CFTO, and there was a company that a fellow that had invested and built a protein powder plant in Sarnia. And most of our protein powder is sold. I have to back up here. All our soybeans for processing are either sold to the United States or to China, and that in turn they will process those soybeans and put them into protein powder. So that would go into vegan burgers, vegan food, protein drinks, and this is being this process has been funded. And it's in the Sarnia area. I can't tell you the exact name of it. I have to look it up. But they're wanting to process 17,000 ton of protein powder to be utilized back in Canada. So
why is that significant, having that powder plant in Sarnia?
So it's a process that we've been selling our export grain to other countries. They've turned around and taken it in process, and they're going to sell it back to us. So now we've got one source that we can market our crop, and we could be able to utilize. We can grow it in Ontario, we can process it in Ontario, and it gets used in Ontario or in Canada.
You've talked many times in our conversation already about things people can do, and buying local is so important. What can listeners look for, either in the grocery store or where can they access so that they can follow through on your urging to buy local?
Read the labels. You know, when you go to the grocery store, source the products that are being produced in Canada. Not all produce that's in the store is produced in Canada. Obviously, bananas and papayas and pineapple, they're not very readily grown in Ontario with our climate. Look for that product of Canada. Look for the product produced in Ontario. It just takes probably 30 seconds to read the label. And really, we should be reading the label and saying, hey, where's this stuff coming from?
I also know that as we get into the spring, soon the farmers markets will be opening up. And also, I understand that there are farmers who have operations where you can buy directly from the farmer. Can you tell us a little bit about those and how they work?
So the one closest to you, and you would know the family quite well, Burnham Family Farm Market. They grow a lot of produce on their farm. They've got an on-farm bakery and deli there where they produce baked goods, pies, cookies, squares. They've got a very successful business, you know, and that is a shining example of grow local, support local. There's lots of family markets around, you know, Moore's Orchards at the east end of Coburg, the same. I know if you go out into the countryside, you'll see some greenhouses here and there. The greenhouse industry is quite dependent on the export market. I know that it's kind of hard to grow tomatoes and have them tomatoes and lettuce year round, let's say in Thunder Bay or Kenora, unless it's grown in a greenhouse or supplied. And of course, there's a lot of transportation costs, if there's not any local, vegetables available. If we can promote it and sell it local, as I say, your money gets spent locally also. You know, those farmers, those producers will spend a good chunk of their earnings locally. And that supports local businesses.
Alan Crothers, I'd like to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Robert.
That was Alan Crothers, president of the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.